This is your host, Beck Lover, and you're watching the Beck Lover Podcast, where you might just learn a thing or two about life. You never know who I'm going to bring on this show. I've already had over 100 amazing guests from some of the biggest celebrities in the world to some of the most interesting people in the world. To me, I don't care if you're famous, not famous. If you have a story, I want to tell it. The only way that Beck Lover can. So make sure you hit the subscribe button, follow, check out all my different platforms. Today, I got a special guest in the house. He's a good friend of mine. We're not going to tell people where we live.
We're not.
Because we found out we live pretty close.
Right.
But I got my boy, nightlife legend, veteran of New York City nightlife. He shares a lot of the same thoughts I do about the world that we live in. We both agree it's very strange, and we're going to get into that, and aliens and demons and all kinds of crazy shit today. And I got my man Disco Dave in the house. Disco Dave, welcome.
What's going on, Beck?
To the Beck Lover Podcast.
Yes, finally, right after all these years, we conversed about doing a podcast and all kinds of stuff.
Now, before we trigger off the algorithms and all that shit, we're going to try to watch what we say because we're trying to behave.
Trigger, yeah.
We're trying to behave and not be put into like timeout because they've been putting us in timeout a lot, bro. I thought we live in a free country, Disco Dave. I thought we could say whatever we want as long as we're not calling to like bring down the country.
Right, right. As long as you was a patriot, right, you protected the homeland, you could say what you want.
We had this illusion, though, but I think, I mean, would you say that we really have free speech? I mean, I know me and you don't care, but do you think people have free speech the way they think they do?
I think the free speech gets robbed when you have a real big influence. You know, if you don't have no influence, I don't think they care about what you're really saying because they're like, who is this guy?
It's like you're barking in the wilderness.
Yeah, yeah. Like you're the little boy that cried wolf at this point to the establishment. You know, when you're influencing like you do on your podcast that you reach over a million people, at that point, they might side eye or raise an eyebrow to somebody that's saying, hey, this guy right here, he has a pretty good following here. He's influencing people. Let's be a little mindful of who he puts on there, what they saying, you know, and that could be when you start getting shadow banned. That's when your free speech starts getting
That's when the brakes
robbed.
In your car don't work, right?
That's when your Tesla decides to go over a bridge and you're like, yo, what happened here? You
know, like, that's when your Tesla just,
yeah, you're like, how is this possible?
It's like in that movie, what was it, Leave the World Behind, when the Teslas just start going?
It's a lot of movies now that talk about these
A lot of symbolism
that,
there, bro. We'll get to that, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that was a good, pretty good movie.
So, that's basically when you start getting a little bit too much influence, you become a Russell Brand. Or Andrew Tate, or do you think, honestly, before we get into this, because I know we were going to start with your life first, but
listen, we're flowing. Yeah. It's going with the flow.
There's no script here, folks.
It's the best way.
Do you think it's become a pattern now that, because what I've noticed is all these men, what they say the common denominator, right? All these men that are considered influencers, mm-hmm. Andrew Tate, Russell Brand, maybe you can think of more because this is the earliest podcast I've ever done. I mean, we're in here, it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
We are.
You called me up. I said, yo, he's like, let's go knock it out. I said, all right, let's go, bro.
What was the saying? You don't do now what you could do, what you could do tomorrow.
Don't put
do
off
now.
What you could do now. Yeah, whatever. You know,
so that's what we
I'm
do.
Tired, man. I'm tired. But do you think that there is a common denominator that for some reason, all these influential men particularly, mm-hmm. when they start to speak out about the status quo of the world we live in, right? All of a sudden, a couple months go by and they all seem to be accused of the same crime. Do you think it's a hit or do you think these guys are all actually guilty? Or do you think they're just trying to silence them all up? I'm talking about the Tates. I'm talking about Russell Brand.
Kevin Samuels didn't talk conspiracy like us. He was just talking about relationship and women and all that. And then look what happened to him. He died magically all of a sudden. It was like, it just seems like, I mean, I can't really say the Andrew Tate, you know, sometimes I feel like these people are put in positions to do what they're doing. You know, it comes to a point that it seems like it's so much scripted reality now that they so that you don't even know if this person that they say, oh, he became rich and he started out in a garage. And you're like, really? And then when you do the investigation, you find out that this person came for money. They come from a different
establishment.
They come from a bloodline. And this is why they need you to think that And not saying that somebody can create something in it, like right now where you're at. You could create something big and make millions. Yes. Yeah, so these guys that become like the Jeff Bezos and the Elon Musk and them that, oh, they started out in a thing. No, they come from great families of a lineage of bloodline and all that. So
I don't buy the whole Elon Musk shit, bro, at all. I'll say it again. I've said it public many times. I'll say it again.
Yeah, neither do I.
The guy don't make no sense. And what I mean by he doesn't make any sense is that I feel like he just gives this illusion off like he's on our side. He's on humanity's side.
Don't they all the time give an illusion? That's what I'm saying.
He's so for free speech. And then all of a sudden, because maybe someone wants to speak about what's going on in, you know, the whole Middle East right now. Because I'm trying to avoid certain... I got to avoid certain words, unfortunately, to not destroy what I've worked so hard to get to.
So when it comes to the Andrew Tate and them, who knows if they weren't implants? You know, if they didn't
control the opposition,
right? Control opposition that they put in there purposely to rile up the troops because they already social engineered reality to a point where they already know that they could put these people in place and they could stir the pot. And then you have the left wing all agitated, and you got the right wing all full of anxiety, and now they attack each other. And then you throw somebody like the Antifas and the George Soros type of people that come in now, and they start putting their shields in there, and all of a sudden you just have chaos. It's been a great tactic for a long time, and this social engineering is very powerful.
And so we clarify, because this might be someone's first time listening to the show, we tend to believe that there is an agenda for the whole world. There's an elite class of people through, it doesn't matter what country you're from. These people all seem to collaborate together. They seem to make laws that benefit them. There seems to be this pattern of oppression and what is slowly starting to change Western countries that maybe enjoyed a little bit more freedom, or the illusion of freedom, the illusion of choice. So we tend to believe that there's something wrong with the world that we live in. And we don't think that certain people have the power they have by accident. We don't think that there are all these beautiful stories of success. We think that these people were a part of lineages, certain bloodlines, certain families, certain organizations, whatever the case may be. To me, Elon Musk makes no sense. I'm all for free speech. Then all of a sudden, if anyone wants to criticize what's happening over in the Middle East, they're labeled as a anti-Semite or anti-this or anti-that.
Domestic terrorists.
Yeah. So it's like, and they're trying to pass some laws about this shit. So I really think even the days of what I'm doing right now are limited. If the people that are in power or that have power, because they're only in power because we allow them to be, under the illusion that we as human beings have no power. So, you know, that guy makes no sense to me, man. It's like this guy comes out of nowhere and he's not even born in America, right? He's from South Africa, supposedly, right? Apartheid country. And he comes here and supposedly this guy is Iron Man. What's the name of the guy?
That plays Iron Man?
Yeah, the character's name.
Oh, Robert Downey?
No,
who are you talking about?
The actual name of Iron Man, like...
Oh, Starks.
Yeah, he's John Stark or whatever his name is.
Tony Starks.
Tony Starks.
Yo, why do you get the muffled thing and I don't?
And because you have a nice voice, you don't need it. And, okay. And the government just hands over the keys to the entire skies and the space. Like, so like NASA.
He is like the Tony Starks.
It makes no sense, bro. How do they just say, people would say, well, that's, you know, you're stupid because that's like the, you know, like corporations, and they become better and more efficient than the government. So the government just privatizes. You don't privatize space, bro. That's like a part of like security protocol, the satellites in our skies. And you just hand over the keys.
If we really have satellites,
but you hand over the keys to a private corporation. It makes no sense, bro. To me personally.
I mean, when it comes to this character, Elon Musk.
What's your opinion on him?
I just feel like I don't really care about him. I feel that anybody like you said, I think he's a walking contradiction. I feel like he's control opposition. And anybody who wants to open up your brain and put a chip in there, he always talks about how AI is going to be the end of everything, and it's going to be the demise of the realm. And then you want to open people's heads up and put a chip in them that's inorganic. It's not natural. So what are we talking about here, Elon? You know, I'm very, very confused. And I just think sometimes when these people speak, they feel like people are dumb to the point that they could just say ignorant stuff and people just go for it. They're like, oh, and then people are so clouded with the fact that they portray him as being this billionaire. So if people look at it, well, he has to know what he's doing because he has $1 billion. And just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean that you're intelligent when it comes to what it is to be a human being on the realm. You know, so just because, you know, there's some people that just know how to make great money, and that is their mindset. That's what they do. They wake up and breathe finances, and they become very lucrative when it comes to that paradigm. So, you know, it doesn't mean that you're smart, because I meet a lot of people that went to great universities, and I'm having conversation, and they're clueless about the things that I'm talking about. And they're very savvy when it comes to the books. Which, shout outs to you, because I didn't go through that. You know, I don't have to pay back $250,000, $300,000
for nothing.
You're not even doing exactly what you went to school for most of the time. You know, so.
So, this is called Dave, my friend. Me and you've had a lot of discussions. We rocked out on Clubhouse.
We did.
They ain't showing us too much love on Twitter, maybe because we're talking all this shit about Elon Musk, but. We are legends in audio engineering of social spaces.
Yes.
I hosted some of the biggest rooms on Clubhouse, and you were also there co-hosting some of the biggest rooms. And my ass was one of the first martyrs on that app. I mean, they, you know, that's what I'm talking about, free speech. They threw me off that app. I didn't even do anything wrong. All I did was host a room where people could debate whether or not another lockdown was coming. I mean, what a fair question that was. You already closed us down. We lost years of our life. And I had hosted a space where we could speak about whether that would happen again. What was so wrong about that question?
Nothing. I mean, you were very hardcore with it too.
No, but I allowed everyone to speak both sides.
No, you did. No, you did.
I mean, masked versus the unmasked, basically. Right?
And we still got the mask running around.
That's
here.
That's crazy. It's like, you know what's crazy, brother? Like, by now, you haven't figured it out by now. You still don't see it by now that you've been had, that you were played.
Well, this is why when I hear these individuals say that we're winning, and I'm like, how are we winning? I just drove by a guy that was by himself, nobody in the car, and he's wearing a mask.
Gone.
They even
said it's the flu now. Like, it's like now, what we said years ago is now not us acting like we're crazy. Like, yo, why are you mad that we were years ahead of you? Like, we saw what was happening. We could see the game, and then they think we're crazy because all they know is the world from a little hole that they looked.
This condition is very powerful.
What do you see happening in the next few years in this world? What do you? No one knows the future, in my opinion, except the creator. But we can predict, we can guess, we can.
What do you think? Could see where things trends, are flowing.
Trends,
right?
What do you think? What do you see the world? What do you see America in 5 years if we keep up on the course that we're on?
Well, for me, I feel that there is an agenda in place, and this agenda, they look forward to it being fulfilled, and. And the thing is, they need the people, all people. You know, this is not, you know, for me, I'm not into race. I'm not into color. I don't care about none of that. So they need collectively the people to believe and have hope and faith in the things that they've been bestowing upon humanity in order to come to that outcome. And they've been doing this for a very long time. And I think there's a thing about energy that I think people are not realizing, that when you think, you know, it's like thought, will, and action. So when you control the airwaves and you control what you see on TV, that allows to influence consciousness. And when you're influencing consciousness now, all that energy has to be played out somehow. So once you could get a collective amount of people to start believing in whatever it is, whether it's in politics or religion and life itself, you could now conjure this energy and direct it to what is going to play out now in this holographic reality. So now the agenda is what the World Economic Forum and these individuals are looking to have, which was considered the New World Order, a new reality where they call sustainable living, where they're going to make sure that what you're sustaining, they feel that it's okay. You can have this and you will only be able to do this. And they're going to blame it on whether it's climate change or whatever false narrative.
I believe climate is going to be the tool that they use to try to force everyone into these 15-minute cities, measure your carbon footprint to a T.
Correct.
I believe they're going to use some form of crypto, whether it's a CBDC, whatever the hell, central banking digital currency, to enforce this shit. And I agree with you 100%. I believe that this is the way not only America, but the whole world is heading. They're going to some type of crazy crisis and this is what we have to do or we're all going to die. And the fact that people are still wearing masks now and it's clear that they've been lied to, everything that happened to us in the last 5 years, they're going to suck it right up.
Yeah. And one thing I realized, you know, gaining knowledge and applying it, I'm not upset or mad at the system. And I'm not frustrated with the establishment or government, because I realized that if I want free will, they have the free will to do the dumb stuff that they are doing. They have the right to do that. Do I like it? No. They have the right. So I have the right not to like what they're doing and to live my life. And the best way I could live is knowing that, let me retain as much energy as I can in order so I can direct it, in order so I could connect to people like yourself and connect to things that's going to help me unfold my paradigm the way I need it to be. So I can build my life to be a little more easier. Instead of me working for life, life works for me. Because that's the trick. It's making life work for you. That, you know, so many people wake up frustrated about having to go to work, don't like their job, don't like the person they wake up with and all that, and they're not connecting to the positive things.
And then they hate on your ass when they think you got it better than them.
And what their job, and the establishment's job, is to distort that. They need to distort that so now the energy could flow where they need it to flow. You know, I always tell people it's like what they did when you look at this beautiful skyline, you know, the New York City skyline. Have you even noticed, though, that all these different buildings, how the skyline is changing? It's
completely
just
completely, bro.
Be altered. Rapidly.
New York City looks crazy right now.
And they knew by giving, putting people and creating a group of people called construction workers, that we want to build this reality to be what we want. So we're going to create this group of people. We're going to call them masons or stonemasons, and they're going to build this city, and we're going to pay them, and they're going to have all these benefits, and they'll live good, and we'll create these foremen and this and that. And they made, you know, puppets. It's what they were able to do to build what they wanted, the reality that they wanted, you know, not what we wanted. And they gave people jobs. And this is what allowed the scandemic to happen, you know, because now you position all these people to feel like they were dependent on the system. And then now the system closes and they tell you, well, listen, if you want to survive, and if you listen to most people that fell for the Jabberwocky, you know, they fell for it because they felt like, well, how was I going to feed my family? How was I going to pay my rent? You know, so now they backed you into a corner for most people, and people didn't trust the power within, whatever that power is. You know, they, even the people that were religious, didn't even trust their own God that they believe in.
I agree.
You know, they I don't know how they turned their back on their own God and said, well, I have to do this. Like, damn, your God wasn't powerful enough to protect you at this point. So it's a shame the direction they're going. And you're correct about that 15-minute city. I've been sharing this for years with people, telling them. They even saying that when they create these 15-minute cities, that you're going to have like 100 times a year to travel outside of your 15 minutes. So imagine you're being told you got 100 times that you can go. So now if your mother lives out of the 15-minute city, the girl you're seeing lives out the 15-minute city, your job is out the... Now you got to break down those 100 times to who's allocated to. I'm going to see you 30 times.
Your poor mother, you're going to see her once a year. 99 is going to be your girls, because you're going to need to have some good times, you know?
And they even say that after the 100 times, if you try to leave...
They kill you.
The 101 time or the 102 time. No, it's like you get fined or something. Your credit system goes down. And the scary part about this is that when did you have time to create all these rules about something that doesn't exist yet? That's the weird thing. I don't think people act like I have the pamphlet, you know, of the whole breakdown of how they're going to do this. And I shared it in our clubhouse and people were like, that's crazy. And the thing is, the future, like you said, it's not written in stone yet. It's unpredictable, because anything can happen. Anything could change. It's just a shame that there is a group of people that been manipulating it and altering it and do have some type of power to catastrophically destroy it at will. Because if you look at history and any kind of doctrine, there was great catastrophic events that happened that reset reality. So there is something powerful that does destroy humanity when humanity feels like they want to rise up and do something, and then they reset it, because there's no way we all of a sudden went from great architectural realities and civilization to the horse and the carriage and cabins all of a sudden in the early 1700s. There's no way. a dude running around in a pony. It took you 3 months. If I wanted to converse with Beck, I had to send you a letter on a horse. You know, and it took 3 months for you to get there. And by the 3 months to come back. So by the time he got back, if I was like, yo, I need help, they're trying to attack me. By the time he got back, I was killed. You know what I'm saying? It's wild, you know, the jump, the timeline of what we have now and what was happening 150, 200 years ago, you know. Shows that there is a greater force that's holding on, that's a miser, that's just holding on to this great information, this great technology, and they're just putting it out in increments as they please. And then we just paying for everything. Everything that they own, they're putting it out. And look, all this, they gave it to us little by little. And the good thing, we you're intelligent enough to utilize it in order to get back to the people and say, hey.
So they cut the brakes on my car.
But just don't get a Tesla. You know,
I would never, ever get that car. Ever. We might not have a choice. It might be the only shit they're going to make in the next 10 years, but
there's
some weird, weird things coming our way, bro.
It's going to be like, what's that movie with Clive Owens?
I forgot it, man.
When the woman was the only one pregnant, the black woman was the only one that was pregnant. Oh,
yeah, to like lead her through. She's the only one that has a child and shit. That's over 10 years old. Well, more than that, I think.
It is.
So, what do you believe, brother? Like, are you religious? You believe in God? You don't believe in God? Like, what's your theory on this world? Go ahead. I want you to get into it. Go ahead.
Well, first and foremost, I always express to people that I don't even like using that word believe. I don't use it because to me, when you look up these words from where they stem from, they call it the etymology of the words. It just means that not knowing. You know, to believe in something and to have hope and faith in something means that I don't know. So now I have to sprinkle this fairy dust on me and I have to trust now what people are saying in order for me to feel good about the things that I'm doing. So I'm fine with not knowing and telling people when they say something, oh, I don't know about that. You know, please enlighten me. Tell me, elaborate. You know, so what I do know about me is that I tell people I'm God. I am a co-creative creation. I'm a fragment of the source. You know, the source, what I call light, sound, and geometry, because this holographic reality, in order for it to exist, it has to be light, sound, and geometric shapes in order to configure this three-dimensional reality. So, you know, I know for me that there is a creator because we are. Look at what we're doing. We're creating right now. We're creating this conversation and this podcast. So that means it stems from a creator, you know, so it allows us to create. A woman creates. She brings life through her portal. So when people call me an atheist and they're, oh, you don't believe in this. I said that you're an atheist. Well, first of all, an atheist don't even make sense because you were created from your mother. So in that sense, there is a creator. So it makes no sense for atheists to even use the word being an atheist for me. So that's how I feel. I'm not into any denomination. I stem from my family being Catholic, my grandparents being Pentecostal. You know, my uncle was a Baptist priest in Puerto Rico. They built churches. They were all Masons and building houses and all kinds of stuff. So I stem from, you know, my mother at one time, you know, I moved to Jamaica, Queens, and she was with a Muslim. His name was Ahmed Abdul Awa. We called him Triple A.
He's in Guantanamo Bay. No, I'm joking.
No, he's not. He was a police officer. Yeah. So, you know, I seen, you know, him, you know, put the mat down and pray. And I'm Puerto Rican. So we ate pork chops and he didn't let us eat pork because he didn't eat pork. It was like, bro, I'm Puerto Rican.
You were like, mom, break up with this.
Yeah. I was like, yo, that's your problem. You know, and still observing him and him sharing, you know, there was a reason why in my adolescent years, in my youth, I was around all these different religions, even leading to him being Muslim and things of that nature that allowed me to see a overview of these things and research and study and then come to a understanding of, you know what, there can't be 4,200 different religions. Something just wrong with that. It's 4,200 religions. Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot of
confusion. At least that we know. I think every day there's a new one invented.
And everybody's God can be right. It's just mind boggling to me. And then on top of all that, when it comes to that, it's like, how is it that when the most deaths that's been going on has always been through religion? the most that all the Crusades, all the wars, where you look at all these movies, you know, these great wars where it was the Knight Templars fighting and the kings and queens and they wanted to be Protestants. And it was like, at the end of the day, it was just so many people dying. And it was like, what happened to the love? What happened to the togetherness, you know, the just the appreciation of a fellow human being that you could vibe with? I like people tell me when the pandemic was happening, I was like, listen, if I meet an Asian chick from Wuhan, where they claim that the COVID came from, I'm going to be with that woman from Wuhan. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to look at her and be like, I'm not talking to you because you came from Wuhan and you're the reason why we were locked down for 3 months. Like, how ignorant is that?
No, so, he locked them down too. But they were screaming.
They had it bad over there too. Yeah,
you saw those videos of the Chinese people going, at nighttime you hear because they locked them in their shit.
And boarded up.
Welded the doors closed, man.
And didn't you see even when they had the
spray? The
how about the sticks with the U at the end? They were like pushing them, and we didn't deal with that. Fortunately for us, imagine they could have did that over here, and they did it. So that's my take when it comes to, you know, religion. Anything to me that I think people are fighting about and always arguing and killing, that to me there's something wrong. And if there's something right in that religion, then the interpretation, they interpreted it wrong. And that could be the consciousness manipulation that the establishment does in order to create the chaos, you know. So I think maybe there's a few people that are actually in each denomination that are really knowing what the doctrine is saying, because that's what parables are. Like let's say when this character they call Jesus, when he came, he said, when you make the two one, you're welcome to the kingdom of heaven. Like, come on, bro. Can you just tell us? What is the two becoming one? Like, this is the thing that annoys me about this stuff. It's like, why do you got to give us magical words? Like, the two is one. So now I got to think, I got 10 different churches I went to with 10 different priests telling me 10 different things about what the two and one means, when you could have just told us. You know what I'm saying? If I'm this powerful being and I'm walking on water and I'm doing this, why can't I just say, hey, listen, this is what you got to do. You got to know that you have male energy and female energy. And once you create balance in that, you become fulfilled within yourself and you become the one person you need to be, where you could now understand what both aspects is. You could have just said something like that and people would have been like, okay. And instead of like the male getting too masculine, wanting to fight and kill, maybe they would have been a little more receptive to the female aspect, where they would have been more nurturing and more loving. And then a woman, when she's frustrated, she won't become masculine and start cursing you out, and she'll be just staying her feminine, compassionate, loving, nurturing way. So all those confused wording that in all these doctrines allows people to misinterpret it and create the chaos.
I think that's the biggest problem with it, to be honest.
I'm just not for it.
I feel that you know, when you say all those conflicts started because of religion, I think it was religion being used by people. Because let's be real, I mean, most religion, in my opinion, in my studies, because I've studied theology most of my life, I would say that, you know, it wasn't religion that was the problem. It was the lack of religion or the lack of understanding, as you say. I think that a lot of people in power, you know, in Christianity, if I'm not mistaken, in the beginning, they didn't even let people have the Bible. They didn't even have access to it. It was just the clergy that had access to the book, if I'm not mistaken.
Possibly.
Okay, the common man didn't have copies of it. He'd have to go to church and listen to them preach it and all that stuff. Remember, people didn't know how to read and write a lot, especially in Europe, you know, during those times. It was even called the Dark Ages, right? The medieval times. People were ignorant, man. They went backwards compared to maybe some other civilizations. So for me, I feel that people have always used religion as a way to galvanize large groups of people to do their bidding. I don't think the Europeans ever gave a crap about Jerusalem. I think they cared about the trade routes. They cared about having control over there. It was never about, oh, let's go reconquer Jesus. And they would tell that to the people, so to go fight for them. You want to go to heaven? The kingdom of heaven is in Jerusalem. Go kill those darker looking people. So to me, you know, it's always been that. But I believe, and this is why I've leaned more towards Islam in my life, I like their explanation, bro. It's the simplest explanation that I've found out of any doctrine. One creator of the entire universe sent prophets and messengers throughout time, throughout the world. He didn't just choose one people. He sent prophets and messengers throughout the world. He sent down the books, right? Because Muslims believe in all the books. They believe in the Torah. They believe in the gospel, even though we don't have the gospel of Christ in its original form. We don't have it. was never left completed during his lifetime.
And the Muslim, the prophets that they said, how many were they? It's not like the
hundreds of thousands.
Oh, okay, it's not like the Catholics that they just had 12, right?
Yeah, we have the big ones that we know their names, but there's so many that we don't even know their names. Some of the scholars believe maybe even Buddha may have been one of the.
He was not on the team.
When you look at his teachings, there's a common core in all religion: forsake the material world and focus on your soul. If you're too much on the material side, right, pursuing money and women and life and this and that, then you forget the spiritual side of your being, right?
It's an imbalance.
It becomes a very big imbalance, and a human being becomes corrupted. The way I look at a human being has three focal points: mind, body, soul. Mm-hmm. When you get these three right, you become enlightened and you become a force to reckon with. So that's one of the things, like, for example, we're in the month of Ramadan right now, right? You know, you still haven't drank your water, but please go ahead, feel comfortable. Chug it, don't worry about it. It looks good. But I like that because why? It makes you forsake the material. Mm-hmm. So for a month, you're resetting your mind. And then you're appreciating what you have. So many of us are not happy just because we don't appreciate what we got. So the reason I leaned more towards that faith was because it said God didn't choose one people. It's the only one that says all of the prophets and messengers, like all of them. So I get to rock with Jesus, Moses, Noah. I love that. And then it ties it all together, that kind of like what you said, that human beings started changing the books, changing the rules. And again, Islam claims that the Quran has never changed. They've done studies on this. Okay, I've done studies on it. Translation into English is not in its original form. The Quran is only original in Arabic. Just like in Spanish, if I said something to you in Spanish and then we brought it into English, it might lose its meaning, right? Because not everything carries over when you translate. You could use a word-for-word translation, but in the context of that language, you lost the original meaning. So that book, to me, and they've done studies, they found remnants of the Quran. Speaking of the Crusades, they found some Qurans in England, in London. They're like 1,000 years old, bro. And they're the same as today. Nothing changed, except some grammar mistakes, right? Which is people wrote by hand. Other than that, same book. So to me, it blew my mind. Like, how is this? And I've seen it with my own eyes, brother. Now remember, I'm a white boy practicing Islam, right? Congratulations, little John. He just joined the Brotherhood. Who saw that one coming? They're like, you want to be Muslim? They
told little John. Is Albanians considered white? Like,
yeah, of course, man. We're the oldest Europeans, man. But we weren't colonizing everyone and killing our neighbors and driving on boats and kidnapping people.
I never saw Albanians like being white. They always looked like they were like tannish.
We're white, but we're not like, you know, we didn't do what the Western Europeans did.
I don't look like.
We didn't
like,
hop on boats and start.
Yeah, I don't look like Viking
kidnapping
white.
People.
I don't look like Norse white.
I mean, I'm a little tanner. I mean, I got a little, maybe my blood pressure high, I don't know. But what I was trying to say, and I lost my train of thought there, but for me, you know, I liked how it encompassed all of humanity. It didn't pick. It was the first major religion to really push back against racism when you study it, right? The Prophet Muhammad's last sermon was, a white is not better than a black, and a black not over a white. All of you are equal to God, except those that are more pious. Meaning the only way that you're better than someone is if you're more righteous. It don't matter what your color is, right? And then, you know, for me, that's what opened up my eyes to a lot of things, what was going on in this world. Because I'm like, why does everyone hate this religion so much? And why this? And why that? And why is the news? And why is the movies always making it look like they're crazy? And they're not. This is not the religion that I've learned. It's nothing like what they've taught me. Where are they getting this shit from? So to me, I feel like when the establishment's attacking something of that nature, but then you go a little further. Muslims are not supposed to use interest. What's this whole system built on? The banking system.
Oh, the banking system.
Yeah. If Islam is the fastest growing religion in America.
So if somebody from that's Muslim lends me $1,000, they can't charge me a VIG on it?
They're not supposed to charge you a VIG, bro.
I'm pretty sure there's some that are doing it.
You know, so, you know, and here's the problem. Muslims are not supposed to use credit cards. They're not supposed to be lending, borrowing money with interest.
So what are they going to do in a digital currency?
So here's my thing, brother. Like, let me get to that. So Muslims, they ain't going to be wearing Ralph Lauren mini skirts, the women, right? They're going to cover, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to drink alcohol, right? They're not supposed to gamble strictly. These are like deadly sins in Islam, okay? What happens to nightlife? What happens to Anheuser-Busch? What happens to the banking system? What happens to fashion? What happens to the adult film industry? If the religion now is 2 billion people and still the fastest growing religion in the world, my man Little John, they said, you want to be Muslim? He said, oh, yeah. Okay. Spreading.
And so it now seems, he stopped drinking.
Let me ask you a question. What happens to that system if the masses are going to this religion, which is against all of those things?
It sounds like it will crumble if everybody's
going to put it to the... It's a direct threat to that system, brother. It's a direct threat to that system. Especially in the banking component. Interest, usury as it's called. Forbidden in Christianity also. Where are my Christian brothers and sisters? It's forbidden. You heard the story of Christ. He flipped the table. Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. He flipped the table because they were dealing in interest. And everyone's lining up for Capital One. These were some of the prophecies that the Prophet Muhammad gave of the end of time. He said the day will come where no human being will be able to avoid interest. Not even the, and even those that can, they will still have the dust of it on them, right? So let's say I don't use a credit card. I'm still using a debit card. A debit card's still based on their system.
It's all based on their system.
And someone's still getting hit for 2-3% every time you use a card. The business owner's getting screwed. Think about how disgusting the system is. I have a credit card. I don't pay it back. I got to pay 30% right now, APR, on $1,000. You, the business owner that's taking it, they're taking 2-3% of your money that I just paid you with the card. I mean, it's disgusting, bro. The whole system is disgusting, bro. It sucks the blood. You can make 1 million payments on your mortgage. God forbid something goes wrong in your life, an emergency, you miss a couple payments. You could have paid $1 million into that house and they'll take it away for 10 or 20 grand. It's disgusting.
Well, the shame thing about even that, touching on paying a house, is that even when you're paying your mortgage, know that you really never own the house because you don't own the land.
You're still paying taxes, brother.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, you know.
I'm paying $20,000 a year, dogs. I don't pay 20 grand, they take my house. What the hell do I own?
And the thing is who are these people that gave them the right to say that you, this is my land and that you have to pay to be on it? You know, it wasn't like back in the days where you could just ride your horse and then you found a piece of land that you liked and you built a cabin there and it was yours. It was good. That's where I live. I come from here. You know, now from
Elderbrook.
Yeah, now
it's next to the creek.
They pay for everything. Energy's free. They found a way to harvest it. And now you're paying. You don't pay this. You don't got no lights. You got to have candles in your house.
You can't even afford them.
Yeah. And so now they took everything and now they charging us for everything. And they like, who gave them the right, you know, to do that? You know, and I'm okay with a little order, you know, I mean, and I think that we at a point now with the establishment where they can make it easy for people to be happier. They got it so good the way they did it. They're very intelligent. Yeah. I give them credit, you know, shout outs to them for the intelligence because you have to be intelligent to control billions of people on some real stupid shit that they do it. You know, it comes from intelligence. And still, you know, even right now, if they told people, you know, we're going to get rid of taxes because they already got it established. And I think this is going to be part of the new system, though. They're going to do that. That's going to probably be the play in order to entice people to fall for the new buffoonery. You know, we're going to do a debt forgiveness, you know, and it's like, first of all, what debt was I in? You know, when they talk about that, we owe all this money to China. I don't owe nothing to China. But everything that I purchased that it says made in China, I pay for it. So what do I owe? And this national debt, this clock that they have, or this always changing
down there by union.
Yeah, it's changing these phenomenal numbers that we're in the trillions of dollars. Who? That's not my debt, because I pay for everything that I have. I work, I pay for it, and I don't owe that debt. Whose debt is that? It's not my debt. And I think that's what they got. That's how bad they got people's mindset, that people actually believe that that is their debt. And now it allows a system that I know there's a clause somewhere. I don't know exactly the article where if they wanted to come now and collect the debt and go to people's houses, they could knock on your door and tell you like, well, you owe $140,000 in debt, whether it's your school loans, your car loan, your house and all that. Do you have this money? Because now we have to pay all this debt. We screwed up America. And if not, they'd be like, all right, well, if you don't got this money, get on the bus. And they could take it to a concentration camp or to some prison.
Yeah, but that's when 1776 starts, my man.
It, you know, so.
Part two. But, you know, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Like, nothing makes sense, man. Nothing makes sense. So, you know, to me, it's like when we talk about how we're taxed, income tax, property tax, right? Tax on everything we buy, on money that was already taxed.
If like, you give me $1,000, I got to pay taxes. $1,000 you already paid taxes for, so I got to get retaxed.
It's crazy. And then you read American history, right, and they talk about how, you know, basically we got tired of England and they put a little bit of, I think it was 2% tax, just 2% they put on the tea and, wow, bro. Right? So did we really, are those really our ancestors in America? Did they really stand up because of a 2%? Like, because the way we're being taxed, and then tolls, we forgot about tolls, brother. Me and you are paying, you to get to Queens, if you're taking a tribal, you're paying $30 a day just to get to work, bro. That's without gas. Toll in your life, and now they want to put one in Midtown Manhattan, bro.
Well, they don't want to. They did.
They're trying
to. They did.
June 4th, they're fighting right now because it's technically unconstitutional.
Yeah, but you think they spend millions of dollars putting all those cameras there for no reason?
Everywhere, man. I never go in there, but I would not want to own something in Times Square right now.
Well, how? So if I'm crossing the bridge now, so if I'm coming through the Lincoln Tunnel, I already paid my toll.
From New Jersey into New York, you're paying 17.
Right. So I don't have nothing to do with
that. The shit was 50 cents when I was a kid, bro. The shit was 50 cents when I was a kid.
Now everybody, you know that.
I'm 40 years old.
I was going to say, you know, back how old Beck is.
Yeah. So imagine now, I'm 40 years.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm saying, though, so now that toll only pertains
just to get into New York. And then if you want to go.
But I'm already paid my 17, so I'm good.
Yeah,
but because then, I come in at 34th Street.
But then...
Are they going to charge you that extra?
Ah, yeah. Then if you want to go from 34th to that zone, another $16.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So if I go from 34th and I have to buy something on 75th Street, and then I have to meet you back down on 34th Street, I got to pay another $17? I have to say this, though. I don't agree with that nonsense. One thing, I'm going to pay it. Because retracting to what I was saying about energy, I realized that the power that we have as beings is that if I have to now be upset that they're raising the toll and the gas and paying that, I'm not taking public transportation. I'm not riding a bike, you know, to do all that. So I like to drive. I like to be able to move when I need to move and drive in and out. So if I have to pay, I cannot put my conscious awareness to like, oh man, just another $16, because I feel then it restricts and it hinders the flow of energy that I'm already connected to, which allows me to get this, because while I might have to pay an extra $16, I'll find $100 on the floor, you know? So it's, I have my reality in a way where I'm already connected to reality in a sense that it's working for me. So I can't, you know, like we live in good neighborhoods. And a lot of people, when I first moved into this great neighborhood I'm in, you know, people were like, only the strong survive here, because you have to have a certain status to continue paying the rent and all the bills to live here, you know? And I've seen a lot of people live over here for a year or two and have to go back to a lesser neighborhood that was more financially conducive to that individual. And I stood in this, once I hit this frequency, I stood in this frequency. And a lot of that was because of my knowledge applied, allow me to say, no, this is not about the money. It's about frequency and staying in a frequency. And once you're in that frequency, you're going to connect to the back. You're going to connect to this person. You're going to connect to that person. And these people are going to be doing great. And you're going to stay on that frequency and you're going to be doing great with them. You know, once I start having to have anxiety and be nervous and fear of what the establishment is doing to put us on a lower frequency, then, yeah, now I'll be all screwed up. I would have self-imploded when the scandemic happened, and then I would have been living in what they call the ghetto. It would have been back to where, almost where I started at from when I was younger. And I refused to put my mindset in that frame.
And that's also because you're in, you know, people don't know that your background is in hospitality and nightlife. So when they closed everything down, it hit a lot of us very hard.
Something we didn't think could ever happen. Hard. When it comes to that aspect, when you say nightlife, nobody thought that would happen. Like us in the nightlife business, no matter what was going on, we knew that we were going to survive because people always needed somewhere to go party, whether you was upset and stressed out, you wanted to go drink and have fun and connect to people. When you was happy to celebrate, you want to go out. So anything between the spectrum, nightlife always survived somehow. I mean, it still kind of did because people were having underground parties and stuff in that nature. For legit businesses like me where I'm at, you know, in Amadeus, you know, we closed for 31 months. You know, and fortunate for me, you know, I deal, you know, it's truly great to have, you know, segueing into like the nightlife thing, to have like the owners, the business partners that I have, the main owners, that it's just the husband and wife. You know, you in nightlife, you always see that's always like 12 partners. And then not only it'd be 8-10 partners, then there's the investors, and then they come in there, they have a say. Now they think they're owners too. And it was like that when I was operating Space Ibiza. When I was operating Space Ibiza, it was a bunch of owners, and then there was a bunch of investors coming in here talking about, give me this, give me that. And I used to be like, yo, who are you? And argue with them and debate with them. And they used to have to go to the owners and be like, yo, what's going on with your GM? I'm like, what's going on with me? I'm protecting the business. Like, just because you're invested don't mean you get free. Send a bottle to us. Send a bottle to, like, no, what are we doing here? You know, so going back to the owners of Amadeus, and they also own Julans, you know, shout out to Richard Romero for being a part of Julans, my boy. And those owners, you know, Alex and Naomi, very, like, sustainable people. You know, and it's not easy to close for 31 months and have a rent that's $60,000 a month and pay your rent. You know, even for like me, when we were closed for 31 months and for the lockdown, I still pay my rent. You know, when I spoke to my landlord and all that, you know, I was expressed, I have a good relationship with my landlord. She told me that, that like 30-40% of the tenants just didn't pay they rent. And it wasn't even illegal to throw them out. And there was people that owe 30-40, because the rent where I'm at is 25 to 3,000 or 4,000. It ranges depending on space. And people just didn't pay. Owe 30-40-50,000, just didn't pay. And then they just moved when it was coming to that time where it was time to pay, or you had the issue. They just packed up and moved and went to another luxury building that was willing to give you 2 months free, and then you was able to put away the 30-40,000 and then just pay for the first month, and then you got 2 months free, and people utilize this. And I didn't know how to do that, once again going back to frequency, because I felt if I would have played that game, which I had the right to, I would have just altered my frequency. So I stayed paying my rent, and you know, too, and shout out to them, they were like, well, you know what, we're gonna give you 3 months free, because we appreciate, you know, that you paid and you didn't have to. And 60% of the people paid, and I was one of them. And I didn't have no income. I was closed. You know, lucky for me, saving and being mindful and being connected to frequency, I didn't bestow that fear on me. And I have to say, though, I enjoyed the scandemic. I did. Woke up when I wanted to wake up, slept when I wanted to sleep. I was podcasting with you for those years, you know, being our clubhouse, and I was gaming, and I was just doing things in my house and doing music, and I was having a good time. It was something, it felt like a sense of freedom for me, in the sense of like the, being close, I had no boss or anybody I had to answer to. You know, it was just, there was nothing to do, so I answered to me. There was nobody having to call me, you got to be here, you got to do this, and all that. And it was, I realized what.
You were walking around the house butt naked probably 24/7.
Yeah, I tell you, this is the benefit if you are rich, that you could, like I always say, like somebody like a that has $1 billion, like Elon Musk or something like that, billions of dollars. Like at this point, you're only working to control humanity at this point, because if I have $10 million, why would I have to work anymore? You know, because think about what we work for. You work so you could pay your rent, your car payments, to keep a roof over your head. Sure. To put, you know what I'm saying? You could just actually live life and enjoy life and not having to worry about doing anything wrong to somebody. Somebody feel like, yo, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you didn't listen to what I told you to do, you messed up, and now you're in trouble. And you know what it is to get yelled at as a grown man in any business that you're in?
Yeah, I couldn't do the football, man. I tried.
You'd be screamed on, and you're like, hold on a second, I'm 50 years old, and you yelling at me? Like I don't know what I'm doing.
Some stupid shit, too. You know? Always over some stupid shit.
You're right with the hospitality. Hospitality has always been the best business. I don't care what anybody said.
It is the most fun, though.
I mean, you're working at a club and people partying, they're celebrating, they're having fun, you're listening to music. Like, how do you go wrong? I always tell this to my waitresses when they complain. I'm like, yo, how do you complain when you're making $400, $500, $600, $700 and then
a night,
and you hear at the end of the night talking about, oh man, I thought I would have made more. You know, if there was a time to be an abusive man, it would become this time to slap you for saying some dumb shit like that. And I always tell them, like, you know, you work in, especially the ones that work 9 to 5, I always tell them, even if you have a good job, after taxes and they do, and they rob you of everything they rob you from, you're coming home clean if you get paid weekly, maybe with $700, $800. You made that in one night. And you have the audacity to complain here about what you're actually making more money than me, you know, per night.
Yeah.
And you're complaining, and I'm the one operating the business. I'm the one making sure everything's okay. I got to attend to every issue. Everything that you do wrong, I got to go fix, you know, I have to converse with people, and you're making more than me. And all you're doing is taking a bottle and putting a sparkle on it and taking it to the table. All you got to do is make sure you stay around that section
and look good
and look good and make sure, are you okay? You need anything? You need another drink? You need another bottle? You know, you need more ice? How hard? It's not rocket science.
No, but there's a lot of stupid people out there. I had a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine. He used to work at the Rainbow Room, which was on top of the NBC studios in the Rockefeller Center. They had a restaurant up there.
Okay, I've never been there.
I think they reopened. But before they closed down for whatever time period that was, so he was a waiter there. And I had never been there. Come up sometime. Kept begging me to go up there. So I'm like, all right, I'll stop by one. I go.
Probably made a lot of money there.
Bro, listen to this. This is, we're talking about over 10 years ago. Okay? So I go see him.
Don't be bothered about this.
All right. Yeah, I go see him. And, you know, I end up going there like right towards the end of his shift. Have some food, have some drinks, whatever. All right, wait for me. We'll go out after. All right, cool. We'll come. We'll get in the elevator. Okay? He just finished work. Shit, man. Shit. He's going, shit. Damn. I'm like, the hell's wrong with you? He's like, I only made $900 tonight, man. I said, what? I said, you made $900 waitering. I said, waitering, bringing people here. You want a Coke? You want that? I said, $900 you made tonight? And you might say, yeah, I usually make like $1,300, $1,400. I said, a night. How many days a week you do it? This is like a weekday. He said, yeah, I work 6 days a week. I said, so you're making about $300,000-$400,000 a year just bringing bread to the table. I said, and you're complaining. Like, it's crazy how ungrateful some people can be, man. You got guys carrying bricks, bro, on their backs for 10 cents in third world countries, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
That and is like, for sure.
Bro, people are just so ungrateful, bro.
I went
so ungrateful.
I went to Mexico just one time in my life. And when I went there, I was having a conversation and I got along with the people there, the Mexicans. And when I was there, they were so great. And the hospitality was on another level. And in this conversation, when they were telling me what they get paid, I was like, what?
Just maybe lying.
And I took like...
to you so you can get a bigger tip?
No, they weren't even lying because I took like $700 and like five and singles. Somebody suggested that I took, you know, a couple of $100 and five singles. So I was leaving $5, $2, $3 here and there, tipping at $5, maybe $10. And they were like so happy. And they were telling me that they were making like, no joke, at the time when I went was like maybe 11 years ago, they were making like $30 to $40 a month. It was a weird number. And I was like, this is impossible for the impeccable service you give. Like, I'm about to put you in my suitcase and bring you to work for me at the club.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because you give better service than some people that are there. Like, it was incredible. And it's a shame, though. I guess the cost of living, I don't know if it balances out. You know how some people move to Florida and they go there and they say, unless you're making New York money in Florida, then it makes sense. But if you go to Florida and you...
make the Florida money, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you might as well stay in New York. I mean, if that's the case. You know, the only difference is you're going to have more sun at that point.
So, you know, we're in the year where they're going to select the next president of this country.
The year of the dragon?
Supposedly. And we're going to vote.
It's this year, right? That we get the new president?
Yeah. Yeah, if we go. What do you see happening, bro? Without triggering all my alarms here on this damn show.
I mean, first of all, I'm going to say I actually do not care. Because I feel like no matter who we have in there, there has been nobody that has did the right thing for
humanity.
For humanity.
Not just for America, for the world.
Right, because they influence, you know, with all this, or we so-called, people so-called claim that they influence, because I still feel like there is a hierarchy that supersedes all presidents, because the president is really, what are we saying here? He's only the president of the corporation known as the United States. This is just a corporation. So he's just no different from, you know, the president of any other company. So now, whoever this individual is, to me, they're going to play the same game. And then you have one that is a super controller position for me when it comes to this man, Trump, this character. So, I mean, I feel like he's in the realm of the Elon Musk. He's in that realm. You know, he talks a good game. You know, he says a lot of funny things. You know, he's funny. He definitely is funny. You know, he's business savvy. We know that. You know, he played Lego with New York City in building, you know.
And he likes pussy.
And he likes pussy. I you know, I didn't even ask if you could curse. Or
no, of course you could curse.
Man. I've been very respectful. Here. Like, if I was on Power 105 right now, you gotta...
by the way, you know, tell my audience, you host on 105, right?
Well, I do a show called The World Famous Topic Time with DJ Self. Shout out to Self. You know, he looked out for me years ago. I've been doing this for him. And we do it on Wednesday or once a week, sometimes twice. And we do The World Famous Topic Time. I'm known over there as Emo Man. You know, he called me that. And I just flowed with it because why not? You know, all these celebrities change their name all the time. And so that being said, Emo Man, he says I'm emotional because every time he asks a question, it's usually about relationships. He says that the narrative that I give sounds like emotional. So he calls me Emo Man. So I just like, all right, I'm Emo Man now.
So 105.1, yeah?
Yeah, it starts at 10 o'clock, 10:30. We go live on the radio. And if you want to listen, you know, if you're in other states or in another country, you could just go to iHeartRadio. You could download the app and then you could listen to Power 105 and you could just do that. You don't have to live in New York to listen to Power 105. They got apps now for this, for those iHeartRadio. So I do that. I've been doing it for years. You know, maybe they need to start cutting me a check. I don't. This is all on the strength of DJ Self, just me wanting to, you know, be on radio. You know, one time I just told him, yo, when you gonna put me on the radio with you? And this, and he was like, yo, come up. And then when I went there, you know, we had a good conversation and people were calling, people were like, yo, we like that guy, Emo Man, he's funny. And ever since then, he was like, yo, keep coming up. And then we just kept it consistent. So he's a great dude, you know. So not too many people do that, and he opens doors, you know. You know, plus I know him for years. He's been a great DJ for me in many venues that I have been operated for in New York, and he's always, his events that he does with the promoters, he's a very good DJ itself. So, and then I have another very close friend of mine, which is DJ Clue, that he's on the radio too. But for some reason, Clue never felt the need to put me on the radio, you know, with him on his show or anything like that. But he don't really do a talk show. So yeah, I do Power 105.
How long have you been in New York City nightlife?
Wow. You know, I've been in New York City nightlife all my life. And, you know, I know it's a cliche. You know, a lot of people say, you know, music saved their life. I'm definitely one that has to jump on that boat and grab an oar, you know, to... It saved my life just from where I stand. I've always been a nightlife person from when I was little. I was always dancing from when breakdancing. Like I said, I'm 51 years old now.
Rocksteady, bro.
I was never down with Rocksteady. They was on another level, you know. Shout out to Crazy Legs. I never been down with them, you know. I was just young. You know, I was young.
Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up, I was born and raised in the Bronx. So I'm a Bronx guy.
Where?
What
area did you grow up in?
I grew up around, I was in Baker Avenue. You know where Baker Avenue is? So I grew up actually in Baker Avenue. It is a small block. And I went to the Catholic school that was right across the street. What's that Catholic school that's right across the street from there? St. Dominic's? So I went to St. Dominic's when I was little. And then I lived there. Well, you know, us, like I said, I'm Puerto Rican descent. And first generation New Yorican. That's what I am.
So you were born here?
I was born here. My mother and father were born in Puerto Rico. So like a Latin tradition, you know, we had like a brownstone, you know, a house in Bakers Avenue. And it was like my grandmother, the head of the household. It was my grandmother lived upstairs. You know, we lived on the middle floor. And then my aunt lived downstairs. And then across the street, my other aunt, you know, we all always lived together. So that's where I was born and raised at. And then my mother decided to spread her wings and move. And she moved to Queens. And I moved to Jewel Avenue on in Park Drive East over there. By Flushing Meadows Park, where Shea Stadium, known as City Field. So I lived there. It was which, funny thing, you know how I told you I've been all around these denominations. So now I moved to Park Drive East, and anybody that knows Park Drive East, Jewel Avenue, is all Jewish over there. It's just all. And this was when I was, this was like 35, 40 years ago. All Jewish. I had a great time. Like, this is one of the reasons why I could never utilize this word racist or be racist, because I've been around the Jews and had a lot. I never experienced them shitting on me or treating me bad. You know, I grew up in the neighborhood running around with their kids. And, you know, you had your little Spanish family maybe lived here, and the black family lived there. And it was mostly 90% Jewish there. Had a great time living there, you know. And I was there for a long time. So when I was there, my nightlife started when my sister is 2-3 years older than me. And she met this Colombian girl named Jeanette. And they were going to the Red Zone. I don't know if you ever heard of the Red Zone. Like, it might be a little before your time. And it was on 54th Street between like 8th and 9th Avenue. So we was going, that's where David Morales first.
But isn't that where Studio 54 was? 54th between 8th and 9th.
No, it was, then it was 9th. Oh. Then it might have been 8th and 9th or 9th and 10th. With Red Zone. Red Zone. Studio 54 was more like in the middle of everything. Yeah. Red Zone was like across the street, was residential. And that's where David Morales was really got his name. From this way he was playing at. So I was going to Red Zone as a dancer, because I was a break dancer. Then I started, then freestyle came out, then the whole freestyle movement came out.
Were you into freestyle?
Actually, I was.
A lot of people, they don't even know what we mean when we say that. They think freestyle, they think in hip hop. They don't realize that freestyle is like, its own genre of music. It was
popular. For the Italians and the Latin.
Yeah,
freestyle.
I heard the term Latin freestyle a lot, because, you know, it was a music that started in New York, like all the good music. And it was basically love music is what it was. Love music with a high tempo, high
BPM. It looked like they were all depressed or always.
like Little Susie.
Tears Shed and all these
Cynthia,
songs. Actually, I'm doing a...
Shout out Sal Fever Records.
That was, I did, well, in this story, Sal's in the story that I'm telling. So I'm actually the doing...
Guy's been doing it forever, bro.
Yo, I'm doing the Roseland Reunion Part 2 at Amadeus. You know, on April 21st, on the Sunday day from 2 to 9, we're going to have a bunch of those performers. We did the first one was,
oh, yeah.
Was
this
like 1,000 people.
Was this one?
Sunday, April 21st. Come down.
April 21st?
April 21st on a Sunday
early. I'll be there because I leave the 24th. I'll be in.
Good. Come down, man. You don't have to worry about that. It's my house.
Sal's going to be there?
No, Sal hasn't came yet. He hasn't came. So DJ Lucho does it. And the first one, he had John Gungi Rivera, which John Gungi Rivera was an original DJ with Little Louis Vega in Roseland. You know, so
Louis Vega's no joke. Even at this age, the guy's a beast.
He plays a part of my story. I used to drive for Little Louis Vega. I used to be his driver at one point.
So this is how you got into nightlife?
No, it's not how I got into nightlife. So when I was going to Red Zone, I was dancing and I was battling in the circle and doing that whole back in the days. And this is when
breakdancing.
Well, no, dancing battles. House music.
Oh, house. Early house.
Dancing the early house when house music first started becoming real big in the scene in New York. And we used to battle. This is when Madonna.
Jelly Bean.
This is when Madonna was going to the clubs and she was grabbing the young boys in the limo and sleeping with them. This is that time, you know. Why she didn't pick me? I don't know why.
Fun house.
But you know, now when I see what's going on with this whole wild shit they be doing, not to segue to the pedophile stuff and all that, yeah, I could see why Madonna they were going to back then grabbing the young kids and the dances and all that. But that being said, so I was in, then I was going to the tunnel. When the Red Zone was going on, then I was going also to the tunnel. And the tunnel had a DJ called Johnny Dinell. And that was a great time. And then it transcended into Roman Ricardo. being the DJ at that time in the tunnel. And then the tunnel closed down, and then they started doing Funk Master Flex and the Jessica throwing the parties. Then it went somewhere
else. Funk Master Flex Night.
Yes, in the tunnel. So I go back from that time in nightlife, you know, and then I met this group, this guy called Adam Torres, which does big concerts now, and Jesse Rage, and this kid named GV, and they were doing the Latin parties. And back then, there wasn't really too many like Latin parties where they were playing Latin house. This is when Latin house first came out. This is when Armand Van Helden came out with the Witch Doctor and stuff like that, you know, back then. And CNC Music Factory came out with the Latin anthem type of thing. So I was DJing at that time. So we opened the doors. It was me, DJ Lucho, Rob Lowe, Test Move. You know, we were the DJs playing in all these Latin parties, and it was
Copacabana, Latin Quarters.
Well, Copacabana, they were different because they were like real Latin.
Yeah, they were playing there with the band,
like the Salsa Merengue, so they were kind of different. We were more for like the urban Latin community that wanted to come out and party and not just listen to Salsa Merengue. You know, we played that with the house. I mean, DJ Boris was playing with me back in the days when we were making $150, $200 to DJ. You know,
if you're even lucky to get $150 back then.
You know, when I was back then DJing, you know, Camilo and Big Ben and people like that.
Shout out Big Ben, man.
It's my guy, Big Ben, Camilo. I know Camilo for like 30-something years. When I was DJing and I was getting paid $200, $250, $300, he was getting paid to open up $50, $75. Like, he put in the work.
Yeah, Big Ben been grinding forever, man.
Big Ben, awesome. Awesome DJ. Awesome.
On the turntables?
Nasty. And underrated.
Nasty.
You know, there's some people, like, you never know why they never really got to be like the DJ AM. He was nice. Big Ben is nice.
Nasty.
So I come back from those times, you know, DJing. You know, I played in a lot of clubs in New York City, you know, downtown. And, you know, I had a great time. So I did that for a long time, DJing. And my passion was always house. My passion was always house music.
So another reason I like you. That's my music too.
Yeah, it's always been. Did you hear the record I sent you?
No, I didn't have a chance.
But it was in the car and I sent you. No,
we was getting ready for the show. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, but I'm tired. I'm yawning right now.
Yeah, so my thing was house. And I always wanted to play house. And I was playing Latin house. And
so you got to see, first of all, you're luckier than me because you got to see the evolution from the beginning of that type of music. And you got to go to the most infamous nightclubs that have ever existed in New York City. It'll never be like that ever again. What can you tell people about what it was like to be in the nightlife in the 90s, bro, in Manhattan?
Amazing, because be mindful at this time, there were no Instagram and none of these things. So people were actually going out to go out. You know, you was going out to party. You was going out to celebrate. You wasn't
never knew who you were going to meet. You had to go out to meet anybody. You couldn't send a friend request. You had to go and do it in real life.
I mean, we would have to call people on a payphone and put the dime in the quarter, and they'd be like, "Hey, meet us over here at 26.
And hope that there was a callback number on the payphone or they had a beeper.
Exactly.
It's crazy when you think about it.
Exactly. It was great times. You know, the tunnel was great. You're talking about 3,000 people in there, just house music, and it just, the systems were like, I mean, there's still some clubs that have great system. And back then, you know, the systems in there were like, it was just like four walls. It wasn't a luxurious clubs, and it was just four walls with great lighting, an amazing sound system, and amazing DJs.
And those speakers, some of those speakers were the size of buildings, bro.
Yo, stacks.
Crazy.
Well, that's what I used to do. So I was known for, you know, they used to battle in the circles, and then I used to take the time, and I used to take mescaline back in the days when I was young. I used to take tabs, and I used to stand in front of a stack speaker.
So for people that are amateurs in that world, that's acid, yeah?
Basically, almost one step below.
So when you took this mescaline, what would it make you feel?
It made me feel everything was clarified. So I would go to the club and I would be dancing for like 8 hours. I would just be in front of a stack speaker, just pulsating bass, just whoo, 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 and just dance and rock out. And here and there, join the circle and battle. And most of the time, it was just me. I just wanted to feel the music and dance and hear the DJ mix. And oh man, it was unbelievable times, man. It was just great. And if I had a time machine, I would definitely go back to those times to just enjoy it again. you know, those times. I think it was great, you know. So from DJing and doing that type of stuff, then I was introduced to, I forgot how I met Louis Vega, and I met him, and then I started driving him to the club, and he was DJing. He was doing a party called Underground Network at Sound Factory Bar, which turned out to be some people know it as hip hop. I forgot what it was called in hip hop. What was that that Jay-Z spoke about, that club? Cheetahs.
Cheetahs.
You know,
I was at Cheetah last night. It was ever open. I don't want to talk about that night. It was pretty insane.
So that was Sound Factory Bar.
Say the Albanians, they.
Yeah, they did justice there.
They did what the Albanians do, bro. I don't know. I went there to have a good time. It was like a scene out of Braveheart, bro. I swear imagine. To God, bro.
I don't.
Covered in blood, bro.
I don't know why they. Well, the Albanians this get time the bad it rap all the time of but being it wasn't, too aggressive.
It wasn't their fault. I watched the whole night.
I'm pretty sure. Listen, there's someone, some people that know how to finish the problem if you start it.
But those days are diminishing too, because you get caught in 2 seconds now. Although right now in New York, they don't care what you do. They let you out anyway. What do you feel about New York City right now, where it is now, where it was 5 years ago, as far as safety, maybe the rules they make? I mean, what do you think, man? I think our city's, I don't know. It's not what it was.
I mean,
buildings are still there, but the energy is there.
Yeah, I think it's just all
like
part
you said,
of
frequency is very different.
It's all part of the agenda. To me, just it's all playing part of the script. We know the script. And for those who've been researching and knowing what the sustainable agenda 2025 and agenda 21, what the costs, whatever this Klaus
Schwab.
Yeah, I just don't like that character.
Adolf part two.
Right. All these people to me, ladies and gentlemen, are characters. You know, they're characters playing bots here, and they just, who knows if they clones or artificial intelligence, like we don't know, and I just really don't care. These individuals, they dictating policy, and I think this is part of their agenda to create this new reality, and like I said before, they've already positioned it to be in a way where now if they want to clean it up, it's like now all you got left, you have to get rid of a great percentage of the population to get it to where you would like it to be now. Even if they now said, we want to fix this and we want to make it right. Even if they said, we want to make it right, they come on the television. The deceitfulness and the lies have been so ingrained through generations that it's done so much damage on a cellular level to people that how you think people are going to react? Some people are going to flip out. Some people are going to do the most. It's not impossible. I never want to take away the you know, that it's possible that people can get it together if they were told a better, given better information, call it a better truth of what's going on here. And I think now they just did it in a way where you would have to get rid of a lot of people if you want to fix it. You know, and this is what they're doing now. So it's in the precipice of that problem now. You know, saying that we can go batshit crazy, have a civil war, some revolutionary war, or what people call World War III, which I feel like we've been in already. World War III is the war against the people, and they're just manipulating it, and here we are. So some places are going to defund what they call the defund the police, which is the most dumb, stupidest shit to ever do. I think that's one of the states that are saying now that they're not taking calls on like some purse shit. They're not taking calls from 8 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock at night to like 6 in the morning. Some wild shit that if you call
it
the
ain't
cops
by accident, man.
Yeah.
It's not by accident. So they degenerate us.
So now you're telling all the criminals that feel free to act like a fucking jerk at these hours now because we're not taking the calls.
It's like the Persian shit when you call.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think, you know, and the most important part back here is people like us, we share this not because we want to rile up the troops, because that's not what I look forward to do. I don't have these conversations and I don't speak my truth in order to make people upset and flip out and go against the government. This ain't about going against the government. This is for you to look in the mirror and have the fight within yourself of why you continue to be ignorant to what's going on when you got people like us that are on the front lines sharing this knowledge, sharing this information with you in order so you could become a better version, because the real win is when you change yourself and now now that collective energy I'm talking about shifts into a new paradigm, which it doesn't go in alignment to what the establishment path that they're looking for you to walk on. And I tell people, so don't get angry at what I'm saying or what Beck's saying or anybody else that has a positive outlook of or telling you what you consider to be a conspiracy theorist or theory. You know, just listen to what we're saying and have some self-reflection. Have some self-accountability, you know. And I tell people, it starts, and they go, so how do you change that? Well, first and foremost, start it in simplicity in your own home. Start being honest in your own home. And this is the best way to do it. There's people that wake up in the morning with somebody that they claim that they're unhappy with, and you're still with that person. How about start there? If you don't, if you're a woman and you don't like the man you're with, and you wake up next to him and you look at him and you can't smile and have that inner smile, like, oh, I love this man, leave him, and vice versa.
And call us. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, you know, leave them. You know, say stop lying to your kids, stop lying to them, and you're mad at the government or the establishment lying to you, and every year you lie to your kid and tell them about a fat fucking guy that wears red called Santa Claus that you know doesn't exist, and you use it as a tool to control your kid. So how do you think that on a grander scale that you're not going to be deceived by a system when you're lying to your own child that you claim you love so much, and every year you're telling them false narratives about Tooth Fairy, you know? So it starts within the home of you accountable of the lies and the deceitfulness that you're doing. If you don't like your job, leave your job.
I've done it. I've walked away from crazy money, bro. Yeah. I tell people some of the jobs I've walked away from.
I love what I do. And
fam, $500,000 a year, I walked out the front door.
Listen, I love what I do. And I have to say, I worked with a lot of great people in nightlife, and I worked with a lot of good owners, because the owners from Space, they were fun. They were wild. They were fun. And there's no better owners than the ones I'm dealing with now. They're family to me. They're gracious, the husband and wife. They invite me to everything. They invite me to every family function they have. You know, just there's great people, and they're just good. The money doesn't get to them. They're not about the money, and he has very lucrative businesses and restaurants and things of that nature. And he has a warehouse where he does hair products, like he sells to CVS, Walmart, yeah, and all that stuff, you know, and very good man. Always takes time to converse and speak. Him and his wife, it's great. I'm telling you, the frequency, like I said, you can connect to great people, and they don't look down, you know, because of who I am, and we're here financially, and you're here, and you work for us. No, I'm, like I said, I'm invited to everything. I know the whole family, and he's Muslim too, actually. You know, he's Persian, and she's Guyanese, so she's not into that. She's into Shiva and that stuff.
Hindu.
She's, yeah, is that what it is? Hindu. So, you know, they treat me like family. You know, they treat me like family. I'm welcome to everything, you know, and I'm invited to everything. And that's the way I like to be. That's the way I like to be. It's not like some owners that it was just like, yo, you're employed by me. You're just my worker. And yeah, you make me a lot of money. You know, you're not me. You know, I mean, shit, when I was in Space, they never invited me to their house. Never invited me to none of their family functions. You know, a lot of owners never invited me to none of their personal things. And not these guys, man. That was always important to me. You know, when I'm working for someone and I'm making money with you, for you, and you start inviting me things, inviting me to the family, you're making me feel like I'm part of your family. Like, I'm with you. I'm loyal. I'm a loyal person. I'm with you, you know, like that. So, yeah.
I think you're a very interesting person, my man, Disco Dave.
Ain't we all from nightlife?
Is there anything else you want to say to my people?
Listen, you know, I just, you know, shout out to Beck, you know, for doing what he does. You know, I always appreciated you and what you do, especially, you know, in the Clubhouse days we were there. You know, you always kept it real. You know, you have a great story about what happened. I was just telling before I came here, I was on Clubhouse on, you know, shout out to Hocus 45th, who's been doing this for a long time. He's the reason why I do podcasting now, because DJ Self, years ago, like 4.5 years ago, when the scandemic first started, he was like, yo, you got to listen to this guy, Hocus 45th. He does an Instagram live. And he, you know, he talks that shit you be talking about. So I went to his live and he was having one, and he did it every day when talking about consistency. And so I went up on his live one day and I was kicking it, and he liked what I had to say, and the people liked it. So he did the same thing self did with the radio. And he was like, yo, keep coming up, you know, every day if you want to the live. And then, you know, remember live was only one on one. And then it became, you could put a third person, a fourth person. And then we started doing that, you know, from the beginning of the scandemic to now. You know, we went from Instagram to stereo, and then, you know, to Clubhouse, and we're doing YouTube here and there. And we just been doing it every day. This man's been consistent, you know, kicking it to people, sharing information, kicking knowledge, you know. And it's a surprise how Andrew Tate, this is what, when you went back to like the Andrew Tate and these people, Hocus has been doing this longer than these people. And why is it that he's not in the position, or even I in the position that Andrew Tate is, that is, these people are making millions of dollars, you know, and Hocus has been doing this for a long time and he's not making that money. You know, and he's not saying anything really different from Andrew Tate saying. So what makes this guy, and this is where I start sensing the plants, that you're a plant, you're a control opposition, because they put you there to talk this shit and they're paying you and all that. Why Hocus is not getting this money? Why is he in a struggle? You know, which he says it to people like, yo, I be struggling and all that, and I'm here every day kicking knowledge. Crazy. And you know, even like yourself, you've been doing this, you've been kicking this to people and all that. You got a great studio. Why you're not owning a whole building where you have multiple studios for people to do different podcasts for what you be sharing and what you've been doing? Like, how you're not better? You know why? Because you're kicking the truth. There's a truth to what you're saying that is more valuable than what Andrew Tate is doing. And this is what makes all those people suspects for me.
Folks, you heard my guy here, Disco Dave, veteran of the New York City nightlife. He and I both believe humanity is facing a unknown risk to most. We have very similar ideas on the world that we live in, and we both say the same thing. Don't take our word for it. Start digging deep. Start really looking at some of this stuff. It's not going to happen overnight, but I promise you're going to see we're not that crazy.
Not at all.
So I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Beck Lover Podcast with my man Disco Dave, the Beck Lover Podcast, where you might just learn a thing or two about life. We'll see you next time. Beck Lover. Lover.